Level up your LA Kings experience with the new Vivid Seats Elite Seats. All the on-ice Kings action with even more exclusive access. Enjoy great seats to the game along with premier dining inside the Lexus Club with all-you-can-eat food and non-alcoholic beverages. Plus, get a free Team LA Kings item and parking with your purchase. Score your Vivid Seats Elite Seats tickets today and earn rewards on each purchase from the only ticket company that rewards you for buying. Experience it live with Vivid Seats, the official partner of the LA Kings.
You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
You're listening to All the Kings Men, the official podcast of the LA Kings. Now, here's your host, Jesse Cohen.
All right, joining us today, new head coach of the Ontario Reign, Andrew Lord. How are you doing today, Andrew?
Really good, yeah. Thanks for having me on.
And analyst for the Ontario Reign, Paige Capistran. How are you doing today, Paige?
I'm excellent, Jesse. Can't wait for this.
Andrew, we're going to start with a bit of an off-the-wall one. And, of course, I closed the link that had the name that I need. I don't know if it's a theory or just a phrase, whatever. It's called nominative determinism. And the idea is that some people whose last names lead them to a specific job. Lord is a very specific last name. Being a coach is kind of lording over people, and you now are the head coach of a team that exists within a franchise whose theme is royalty. Anything to that, or is just a happy coincidence?
That's quite the analysis there.
Yeah, well.
That's pretty good. I guess it's meant to be, right? But I never minded my last name, to be honest. I don't usually even know my first name anymore. Everyone's just going with Lordo all these years. So other than probably my mom, I don't really hear my first name. So, cool linkage, I guess. I guess it works. So maybe you guys can use a little bit going forward.
So the one place that you will only ever hear your first name, unless you request otherwise, is here on All the Kings Men, because as plenty of people now know, I don't like nicknames. I find them weird. I never had one. I don't like them. Do you prefer Andrew or Coach if we're not going with Lordo? And to be clear, we're not.
Probably Coach, I guess.
All right, perfect.
Andrew works. Whatever you want to go with, Jesse.
All right, I can do Coach. Coach is fine. I think I talked to Barry Melrose one time and asked him, like, do I call you Coach? Because I grew up with him as the coach of the Kings. And so it felt weird to just be like, hey, Barry, what's going on? All right, Coach, I can do. Coach, Paige and I both went back and listened to the interview that you did with us on All the Kings Men when you were the head coach of the Greenville Swamp Rabbits. And I'm not sure why it didn't stand out to me more in the moment, but going back and listening to it, it stood out to me a ton was how many times you referenced how lucky you were to have certain experiences in your career. And maybe it's just because of where I am in my life. Maybe it's just 3 years of experience, whatever. I don't know. But I found myself really charmed by that approach that you took. I have a friend that I've been friends with for over 30 years. And one of the fights that we've been having for decades now is whether or not the good things that happened to him, or I shouldn't say that, whether or not the bad things that happened to him are good luck or bad luck. And the simple take that we've always had is that, like, you know, something bad happens to him, it's bad luck. And his take has always been something bad happens to him, but he survived. So it's good luck. It could have been so much worse. And obviously that's a perspective choice. You know, you don't have control over everything in your life, but you can control how you react to it. So like I said, I was thoroughly charmed going back and listening to that conversation. Is that a conscious choice on your part, or do you think you've just got that naturally sunny disposition?
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't know if I have a sunny disposition all the time. I think I'm pretty intense, to be honest, especially when I'm on the coaching side of things. Personal life, completely different, of course. But, I do feel extremely lucky. I mean, to get to be a part of this game, to be, you know, involved with the people I've been involved with through all the teams, back to playing days, to coaching days, the players, the coaches, you know, the list goes on, the amount of friendships and mentors I've had and all that, and some of the breaks. I mean, you even just look at the cities. Cardiff's a fantastic city. Greenville, South Carolina, Halifax, Now California, you know, it's a pretty good run from, you know, places to get to, ownership through management. So yeah, I think I'm really lucky. Do I believe I've earned those breaks? For sure. I think the other piece to it is I do think you gotta always keep things in perspective, and you gotta make the best of every scenario, right? So to your friend's point there, if you know, no matter what the situation is, you gotta make the best of it, and being positive and upbeat and fired up about things is gonna be get you far further than you know, being mopey about the same situation.
And when you think, you just mentioned how, like, you think you're a really intense coach, but I've heard you say how you've kind of had to adjust as the game has changed from when you've played to when you first started coaching to kind of ease back a bit. How has that transition been for you?
It's been good. I think it's just kind of gone along with the times, right? I think 10 years ago or so, there was already a pretty good transition happening. I think the last, probably since COVID, it really got going. And then really the last 2 years, I've noticed it even more so with the young player. There's a lot of good things that come with that. I think there's some things that maybe aren't as good because of that. But things that, you know, as a coach, you got to keep learning yourself and adjust with times and improve yourself throughout. So yeah, you know, I was raised and coached by some pretty hard coaches over the years, and it was about accountability and pushing outside your comfort zone and demanding a lot. And I think that's a lot of what makes me the coach I am today, because of those people. So I try to pass that on to our players now, obviously in a more of a 2025 way, in a good, respectful way, a collaborative way. I think, you know, the team's got to be a team, and we're all working in it together. And essentially, we're trying to get these players to be their own coaches too, right? And really push themselves to be as good as they can with the help of us as a coaching staff. So, yeah, it's, you know, the times have changed a lot. And I definitely think I've grown as a coach over the years as well.
Andrew, you used some code words in there, and I don't know if I'm just tuned to hearing them or if it was cultural, but one of the things I've noticed over the last 10 or 15 years is that coaches today of a certain generation talk about younger players. And the narrative is that, you know, younger players today need to have the why explained to them. You know, when I was a kid, you know, we had to skate uphill both ways to school, and when the coach said something, you just did it. And I mean, like, I could write the narrative that coaches say word for word. And I've gotten a little tired of it, because it's like, you just ask any coach and it's like, when I was a kid, the coach just told you to do something, but now you have to explain why. You didn't give that answer, but there was a hint of it in there. But you're not a coach of a certain age. You're 40 years old. You're younger than me. Like, you're theoretically part of the generation of players that would need to have the why explained to them. Do you feel like part of that older generation, or do you feel like part of that younger generation?
A bit of a blend. It's a great question or comment. I think it's right on the cusp for sure. You know, I was coached by some very hard coaches over the years, but then I also had a guy like Todd Nelson, you know, who had, you know, Joe Hicketts in Grand Rapids. They won a Calder Cup together. Todd coached me in Oklahoma City back in maybe 2011. And, much more of a, you know, kind of open dialogue, players coach. I've definitely seen both sides of it. You know, I think I'm right in between, which is probably a good thing. It's probably allowed me to transition easier because of that. You know, maybe not so deeply rooted in the old school way of doing things, so direct and not giving any reasons, you know, which is a lot of, you know, what I was maybe what I saw when I was playing in my early days, right? So yeah, I'd say there's a little bit of a blend there for sure. And definitely the new age player now needs the why, which I think is a good thing. You know, they think for themselves. I think questions are really good, and we certainly will have an open door policy this season.
The phrase that really I liked that you threw out there was making players their own coaches. I just really like that. I just wanted to say it. Sorry. Go ahead, Paige. I just wanted to say how much I like that phrase.
I was just going to say how you've said that like coaching in the NHL is your dream, and you've had some coaches that have been instrumental. You've mentioned Jim Montgomery, and my ears perked when you said his name. I was in the Boston media while he was with the Bruins. So just kind of wanted to ask about him and what part of his coaching style do you think you have done with yours?
Yeah, and again, there's a lot of coaches through the years, but basically, I got a scholarship to RPI. I was fortunate to go there, business management degree, and we were not a great team the first 2 years. They changed the coaching staff, and Seth Appert and Jim Montgomery came in. Jim was one of the assistants, and you know, it was obviously a complete overhaul. They brought in different players. They made some additions. I went from being, I think, a pretty solid piece on the team to being in and out of the lineup, which, you know, going into your junior year in college is an eye-opener. I think every player just about when they're younger believes they're full-heartedly going to the NHL and nothing's stopping that, right? And all of a sudden, I got a taste of reality of, wow, I'm in my third year of college and I'm not even in the lineup for a school that, you know, we were below 500 team, right? So there came some hard lessons through that time. And I think Jim and Seth Appert were instrumental in that, you know, and I definitely can relate or use that now with some of our guys. You know, it's not always what you want to hear. It's what you need to hear. And they coached me up, you know, it was all about my details. You know, I was a bigger forward that probably thought he was a little more skilled than he was. And I needed to learn the pro details, you know, defending, be on the right side of pucks, tracking, stick detail, boxing out, using my size offensively, just small little things again and again that, you know, bring your consistency level up and your B game up or whatever you want to call it. And that was really helpful for me then when I went to pro the following season. It really probably allowed me to, you know, I didn't have a great career by any stretch, but it allowed me to have a career in pro hockey for sure as a result.
You just went into a very specific train of thought that I think the Kings probably prioritize and you know, and like. Without giving up too much of the background details on the interview process, if you're not comfortable with it, when you're interviewing for a job, you know, like head coach of the Ontario Reign, the Kings are known to have a very specific identity, for lack of a better word, right? Like a very specific set of priorities. There's an organizational identity. Did you feel like you were aligned with that, or did you feel like there was a mandate from the front office that you will align with that?
I think I'm completely aligned with that, and I think that's maybe not the sole reason, but a big reason why I'm here. And I think that was even a big reason why I got into Greenville when I did. You know, obviously they call around, references aren't hard to get nowadays, and you know, even from my days in the UK, that's it's a staple of my fundamentals and a coach and the teams that I'm a part of, the details, the structure, you know, being really well prepared against your opponent, all those things, being defensive minded. Even our most skilled players have to defend and buy into a team game, right? Again, that's it is a team game. When you get your best players playing the right way, it's really dangerous. So all those fundamentals and those beliefs have been a part of me for years, back to, you know, probably my last 5 or 6 years of pro hockey, where I really bought into that and had probably my most success as a player. And then that bled into my coaching career. And yeah, I think it's right in line with the organization. And that's why I have a real comfort with this position now. And think, you know, we as a staff can really continue to help players, you know, and help the Kings.
Being the head coach of an AHL team in 2025, especially an AHL team that's as integrated into the larger organization as the Reign is with the Kings, you're sort of serving one master while being your own. It's not a great turn of phrase, but like, you know, you're in the same building as the Kings. You're on the same practice rinks as the Kings. The offices are there. The coaching staff is there. Everything is, you know, a stone's throw away, like less than a stone's throw away. You open a door, you can holler down a hallway and you're there. But you're also, you know, responsible for your own team and your own players and the whole rigmarole. Now that the Kings organization is sort of starting its first footsteps in a new era, right? Rob Blake is no longer the general manager. He's been here for 8 years. Now that we've got Ken Holland, players are still for the most part the same. The identity is for the most part the same, but we're starting to see a possibility of things changing. I mean, well, they have to, you know, people, personnel change, things change. How much direction have you been, like, when you go to interview, when you go to talk, you know, how much has it changed from when you went through the interview process for the Greenville Swamp Rabbits? Do you get the sense that anything has changed with a simple swap of general managers?
No, not yet, to be honest. Obviously I'm a tier down from there, and mm-hmm. they're beyond busy. I'm sure Ken's last 2 months has been insane, and you know, I'm sure that time will come where any adjustments or changes will be, you know, put down to our level as well. But I think the fundamental beliefs and, you know, what makes the organization what it is still really intact. There's obviously so much of the same staffs at both levels. And yeah, I think it's been really seamless so far. So through the interview process, through my first few days, you know, working with the team here, it's all status quo and feeling good about things. Obviously, more than happy to adjust and do anything that's needed to help the big club.
I wanted to ask about your relationship with Rich Seeley. Obviously, being able to get to know him when you were in Greenville a few years ago compared to now. And like back then, it was more transactional. That's what you were talking about. And now you're having phone calls about systems and players. How nice is it for you to kind of have that next step in this relationship?
Yeah, it's incredible. I think, again, it's another big reason why I'm here, I would guess. And the 4 years in Greenville, he was great. I mean, it even dates back further. Some relationships from the UK. He knew some of the same people, all same friends group, connection group, however you want to call it. So it's, you know, the relationship's been there for a really long time. And in Greenville, there was a ton of communication. You know, we were, you know, if not daily, weekly for sure, but more closer to daily. And that's, there's a lot of things that come with the ECHL level, right? It's all encompassing. And fortunately for me, he had coached at that level years ago, right? So he was a good mentor in a lot of ways, roster management, how to deal with all the player movements. So it wasn't just about, you know, the players you guys were sending down. It was also about helping me be a better coach and manage our situation in Greenville. And overall, I mean, the affiliation was incredible, you know, from when it was announced, you know, even Glenn Murray came to town for a couple days and shared his time with me as well. So I think with Rich in particular, it's been great. And it's been fun. Again, there's a real level of comfort. Obviously, there's new things, but there's a lot of stuff that I'm already really used to, especially all the relationships here throughout the organization.
You mentioned player movement, and when we spoke to you a few years ago when you were the coach of the Greenville Swamp Rabbits, you talked about the difficulties in various different leagues of finding players and making sure that you had a full roster, and, you know, you got players getting pulled all over the place, you know, sometimes, you know, to different countries. As it is now, your team, you know, if I looked at my spreadsheet, so I keep just my own little records of who's on the team and who's not and who's playing where. And if I look at it, I can make a Kings lineup for opening night, assuming full health, that sees three players who played games for the Kings down the stretch last year, possibly playing for Ontario at the start of the season. And then the rest of the Reign roster, I can probably hand you the roster. I could probably take a guess at lines. I mean, obviously that's up to you and I could be way wrong about that, but I mean, you might have players who finished the season last year in the NHL available to you who might be first line players for you. Is there some sort of comfort level, you know, as a coach coming in and having those decisions kind of made for you at some level?
I will say I don't miss having a chase and finding e-bug at the ECHL level, sure. You know, 6 hours before a game, calling the opposing team's coach, you know, we're in Florida, and who do you got local to be our backup goalie? I don't miss that. You know, the transactions at the coast level really prepare you for anything. You know, you could have a power play, you know, session in a morning skate with both flank guys, you know, working on new structure or something. And 3 hours later, right before the game, they're just gone. Right. So really comfortable with all that movement. As far as the potential depth of the American League level. Yeah. I mean, what coach wouldn't love that? To have a good team, to have good players, to have players that know what the NHL is about, that can help, you know, push the message within the group of how hard we want to practice, how we need to play, the details that matter, helping the young guys. You know, the more of those guys, the better. They're going to help drive this whole thing. So, yeah, we'll see, obviously. You know, I don't get too – I'll obviously know – what we're looking at and the potential of it, but I'm also very flexible knowing how quickly this game changes at the pro and especially the minor league level.
I've become really obsessed over the last 6 months or so. There's no reason that you should know this, Andrew, but for health reasons, I've been sort of forced to stay away from everything for the last 5 or 6 months. So it's given me this weird perspective on everything, and I've become obsessed with the idea that I'm not sure I believe in good coaches anymore. And it's not that I don't believe that coaches can be good. It's just that I'm not sure I know what makes a coach good or bad. Like I take it on face value that if a coach reaches a certain level, he must be good at something. But Jeff Merrick, of all people, threw out a stat that was like, there's only three coaches that have ever won a Stanley Cup with more than one franchise, and two of them did it before the original six era, and the third one is Scotty Bowman. So you go like, all right, fine, the greatest coach of all time did it, and then two guys from like the 30s and 40s did it. After that, if a coach wins a Stanley Cup and then leaves the franchise and goes somewhere else, he's never done it again. So then the question is like, well, okay, what makes a good coach? And I've talked to a bunch of people about it, and it's just sort of consumed me way too much. And Austin Stanovich, who's a writer that covers the Kings and the Reign a bit, came up with the phrase, there's no such thing as a good coach. There's just a good fit. So then the question, I guess, to you is, in your mind, like, what makes a good coach? Or do you sympathize with what I'm going through when it comes to it? And like, what's a good fit in your mind versus a good coach?
Well, I would say right off the hop, at this level, at the pro level, you know, everyone's a good coach. It's so narrow at this point. Even to get to this level, you got to have breaks. It's very, very difficult. And yeah, I mean, the hours that everyone puts in, the grind of it, the analysis of it, everyone's got the technical knowledge, the communication skills. Obviously, there's small little degrees in all those areas that probably shift whether you're a good coach or a great coach at your particular level. But I certainly believe it, you know, at this level, everyone's a good coach. I do think continuing to evolve and get better every day and every year and every off season is really important. I think it's easy to, after the grind of the season, kind of shut it down and, you know, you got to take a break, but you also got to come back retooled and a better coach than you were the year before. I think that's potentially a separator from some coaches to others. And then as far as the fit, yeah, I mean, the fit's so important. You know, there's all sorts of different styles of coaches, their beliefs, their systems, their structures. If that's not aligned with the organization, then I don't really see how it could work out overly well. So yeah, fit is also super important.
The other thing that keeps happening is that coaches keep winning coach of the year, and then 2 years later, they're out of a gig, which makes me just shake my head and go, well, I don't understand. Are they the best coach in the league, or are they, you know, an unemployed level of coaching? Speaking of which, you have been named coach of the year in various leagues. I'm not going to ask you to say whether or not you think you're a good coach, because I would hope the answer is yes, but I'm not going to put you in that position. What do you think your strengths are as a coach?
Yeah, I think I touched on it a little bit earlier. Really believe in character, culture, not only establishing that, but holding, you know, the standard to that and the accountability to that. And, you know, that's not always easy to do. That can be difficult conversations. There's a lot of time and energy that needs to be put into that. And then once that's established, obviously keeping that at that level. And then from there, I think tactically, I have a good feel for the game and understanding. I've played all sorts of different systems over the years. I think my time overseas really helped me see different styles of play. I think being at the different levels of pro hockey has helped me as well as a player and a coach. I think communication is right on the forefront of that. And I do really believe in the get better mindset every day. And, you know, that, again, a lot of cliches, I'm sure, particularly that one, but I do really believe that I live that.
You had a nice little e-bug story earlier. So sticking to the goaltending stories, Adam Brown, you know him from Greenville with your time there when he was there too. He's an upbeat guy. What's your best Brownie story?
Oh man, I'd have to give that some thought. Yeah, I wish I could pull one right out in front of you here. I'd have to give it some thought, but maybe a slap shot. I don't know. No, his shot's gotten good. His shot's gotten good. I take that back. No, Brownie's great. I mean, I've said it, I think, in an earlier interview. That's one of the most exciting things of this, of me getting this opportunity is our staff. I mean, we all get along really well. We can have a laugh together. I think there's a great knowledge base and everyone's got a good feel for each other there too. And, he saw how I worked as a head coach at Greenville, which I think should help as well. But yeah, Brownie's the man. He's a great fit and a great guy.
For Chris Height, when you hear his name, if you had one word to describe him, cause he's another guy with a huge personality, what would the one word be?
Yeah, I'd go awesome. How about that? Just awesome.
Love it.
Andrew, when I was going back and listening to our conversation from a few years ago, a segment popped out. Again, there were a bunch of things leapt out at me, and I wish I had caught them in real time. But you talked about character and values in that conversation, and it comes through in this conversation here. One of the things that I really love about hockey is that it is a team sport, as you have yourself identified. And, you know, Paige and I have had conversations about the way that being a team player can help in other phases of life, right? Like, it's not just on the ice that you want to support your teammates. It's anything can be a team game if you view it that way, right? Like, one of the things that drives me crazy about blackjack is that people sit down to a table and they don't realize it's a team game. Long wind up to getting to, you know, when you're a head coach of an AHL team, you know, we've kind of alluded to this already, like, you're coaching your guys, you're coaching your team, your record will, you know, have an impact on your career. But it's not the only thing that'll have an impact, right? Like, if you go out and win, you know, 5 Calder Cups in a row, well, okay, Andrew Lord's a phenomenal coach, great, wonderful, accolades, you know, glory, etc. But if you do a great job and every player that comes through Ontario has great things to say about you and their careers flourish and they can point back to your tenure as their coach, that's almost better. I think over the last few years I lost track of whether or not the priority for Ontario was on development or competing. Has that priority chain been clarified to you? I don't want to ask you to give away.
Oh, it's definitely been clarified. Yeah. There's been a lot of discussions I've had, you know, back when I was in Greenville and certainly since I've been hired and, you know, right before I got hired there. And it's hand in hand, you know, and that's a huge, again, belief that I have personally. And I think it's really in line with the organizations, right? I do think there's some spots potentially nowadays where it's just purely development, so to speak, and ice time and winning doesn't matter. And I really disagree with that. I think you have to learn how to win. You have to learn how to do things well when it's hard. Anyone can play well, you know, when they're fresh, when they're not tired, when they're not a little sick, when they're not a little injured. It's really about those hard days and how much competitive spirit you can bring forward. And I think that's, you have to learn that. That in itself is developing, right? Developing isn't just skill set. It's the mental toughness. It's all those other things. It's when you get scratched, or, you know, maybe you get 8 minutes of ice time in a game. Can you conduct yourself the right way to your teammates and have a good, honest conversation with the coaching staff behind closed doors, and then come out the next day and be the best version of yourself? You know, I think all those things have to be learned. Yeah, 100%. Really believe in that.
As you started having some phone calls with Reign players, have any of those conversations stood out to you?
Well, I had one so far. So I've had the coaches a bunch, obviously management a fair amount, and then I had Joe Hicketts yesterday. So that was great. That was really exciting. Carved out some time there. So we had a good catch up, and what a guy. I mean, I've always obviously heard, met him as well, two training camps ago briefly, got a little bit of a feel for him, but awesome phone call. What a guy. You can tell why everyone loves him the way they do, and what he means to the team, and just a really good fit for the organization. So again, when there's, you know, things to get excited about, that's certainly one of them as a new coach, right? That guy's terrific.
When it comes to leadership groups, are you a coach who believes that the players self-select, you know, the leadership group, or are you a coach who believes that the coaching staff and management identifies the leadership group and then informs the team?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely say it's a collaborative effort. I'd say you definitely get the player input 100%. You need that, right? We don't see everything. We don't have a feel for everything. You need that input. And then I think between management, coaching staff, organizational beliefs and fit, we'll make the final decision for sure. But yeah, I think it's a blend, and I think it is critical, hugely important decisions. And I also, again, maybe cliche, but I think the leadership group's far outside just the letters, right? I think you need that 5 to 7 to 8 guys for sure. And then even a little second tier after that, right? And those are, when I've been on good teams, that's certainly how it's been. So I really believe we'll have that this upcoming year as well.
So I'm lost in thought for those wondering why there's a pause here. Andrew, I'm viewing this, and part of the reason that I'm sort of all over the place today and struggling to nail down my thoughts is that I see your hire as this really excellent opportunity for people like myself and Paige and Zach Dooley and Jared Shaffrin, and I know you spoke to John Hoven the other day, and for anybody who their professional responsibility is to communicate, you know, the goings on at the club and how things operate and how things work. You're obviously incredibly well spoken and well thought out. And so I see your hire as this incredible opportunity for us to try and exploit you as a tool for teaching Kings fans what to expect and what to look for and how the sport works. And then, you know, whatever, I have my larger philosophical beliefs about how those lessons can be applied to other parts of life. I'm going to go back to the character and values bit that we mentioned earlier, and then your answer to Paige's question and to my question. And you talked about, you know, it's easy to play hard when you're well rested and everything's fine and everything's going well. I'm a firm believer in the phrase that, what is it? Adversity doesn't build character. It reveals it. It sounds to me like you agree with that belief.
Yeah. Well, the first thing is, I think, you complimented me a lot there, so thank you. No, I don't know if that means I'm a good coach or not, hopefully. But
if Ted Lasso's to believe, it does.
Yeah, and then from there, yeah, I love that. I think that's another cliche, that adversity reveals it. I do agree with that for sure. We find out what we're made of when we're uncomfortable, and you know, everyone's good right out of the gates, or when they're fresh, when it's easy, when they're getting the ice time, when the coach, you know, the perception is that they're liked and they're getting the opportunity. It's about what you can do in those other situations, right? You're on the road, you have a tough road stand, you've had some tough losses, you're missing some key players. The list goes on and on. Maybe you got some personal stuff going on. Can you carve out, a consistent game? Can you be the most consistent player on the team, or can we be the most consistent team in the league in those areas? And if we do that, all those little percentages will add up, and I think we will be really hard to play against every night, which ultimately is a huge goal for myself as a coach, and definitely this team is to be hard to play against every night.
Ordinarily, I would never ask a question like this, but somebody on Twitter dared me, and I'm an idiot, so I'm gonna do it.
Go nuts, bud.
So somebody asked if we were going to get a conversation with Andrew Lord, and I said, yeah, soon. And I don't even necessarily understand the question, but like I said, they dared me, so I feel like I'm kind of have to. The question is, I dare you to ask him what makes him different than any other Reign coaches. Now, I feel like the last half hour of conversation we've had should probably have answered that, but that's the question. And then the third part is, what's your favorite NHL team growing up?
Okay, well, the first part, what makes me different? I don't know. I think we all got our little intricacies. You know, John Roblowski coached me in Wheeling years ago. I think we saw a lot of similarities in some coaching beliefs at times. We certainly have different beliefs in other areas as well. Definitely different personality types. I'm trying to compare myself to Sturmey, which I probably shouldn't even do. You know, he's just a lead all over. He's the Boston Bruins head coach now, which is exceptional. I learned a lot from Sturmey. I mean, he's a fantastic guy. Just really knowledgeable. He's got a great feel for just about everything. And I really learned that aspect of it, that, you know, sometimes you just got to go with your feel and feel it out. So, yeah, I'm sure I'm different in a lot of ways, similar in others. Feel good about what I can bring and help the organization. I think it's obviously been going great here for a lot of years overall, and I'm just here to help.
And favorite NHL team growing up?
Vancouver, all day long. Yeah, I'm born and bred Vancouver. That probably lasted until I was, 18 years old, and then slowly dwindled over the years. Pretty hard to be excited about another NHL team at this point. I think that's probably not even allowed.
I was going to say, we might have to coach that answer out of you. But
well, now that you're going to be coaching the Pacific Division, does that mean Abbotsford will be your number one road rink that you're excited to go to?
Definitely excited. Definitely will have some family there. I've been East Coast now for a lot of years, and then the UK is obviously even more East. So, yeah, when I got the call about the job, there was definitely some extra excitement there with some family members.
Final round for me, like I mentioned earlier, I could probably give you the Reign roster, or at least the bulk of it. I'm assuming you've had an opportunity to familiarize yourself with, most of the players, or at least who's likely to be there. Have you had any one-on-one experience with any of the guys that you're likely to wind up coaching in the coming years?
I mean, quite a bit, or maybe not quite a bit's the right word, but touches is probably the better way to say it. I got the list right here, but Kromiak, I obviously saw multiple camps. Pennelly, I think, at one. Ward, for sure, multiple. Lawrence, I think, one. Jamson, one. There's been a number of guys. Some of the D, a little bit, probably not as much there. Obviously Portillo a little bit. So yeah, enough. Definitely got a lot of work to do here the next 8 weeks, and it's a long training camp too, so I feel good about where we're at.
And then final one for me, Paige, feel free to jump in after this. There's a fan out there, Andrew, his name is Nick. He calls himself Johnny Utah on multiple platforms. And I could, And I think I've said this to him face to face, so I don't think I'm just picking on him publicly. I'm pretty sure I could train ChatGPT to write his questions and his arguments for him. He likes fighting. He likes toughness. He likes fighting. That's it. That's all he cares about. If you could give him a team of 23 Stu Grimsons or 23 Wayne Gretzky's, he'd take the team full of Stu Grimsons, you know, all day long. Fighting has gone away a lot in the at the NHL level, but it's still around in the AHL. AHL teams still have enforcer types. So for Johnny Utah, where do you come down on the importance of team toughness? I won't even say fighting. I'll just say team toughness.
Well, I think it, yeah, I mean, I think concussions suck, obviously.
And that's, yes, they do.
That's the biggest. How great would it be if there was no such thing as those, right? And if there was no effects from them, then we could all just fight every game and have a ton of fun. You know, I did a decent amount of it in my playing career. Not that I was very good at it, but I was definitely willing and always showed up, you know, there. And I still it's amazing to me now with how much the game's changed. There's still an element of fear of sticking up for your teammate, of maybe not sending a message, but that just that competitiveness all in for each other. There's definitely still an element of it. I still think it's a real tool or weapon, even at in some cases. I should have mentioned Doty in the last question. Dotes was even in the UK actually when I was over there. So we go back a long time. Not that we're you know, close in ties, but we've known each other now for a long time. So you know, we've all seen how effective he can be. So there's definitely an element to it. And it's, you know, far more than just fighting. It's getting to the inside, it's playing heavy, it's being hard on faceoffs, hard on net front battles, offensively, defensively, winning races out of corners, you know, finishing checks on the forecheck. List goes on, right? There's tons of grittiness that's needed in this game. And I think, you know, the Stanley Cup Finals really showed that as well, right? It reinforced that even more and how the game's gone back that way a little bit here the last few years again. So we're going to definitely need it. And we're definitely going to have it.
Last one for me, Coach. You said that you hauled it when you went from Greenville to Halifax. So what's your X's and O's on on this one? What are you going to do?
Not doing that. Yeah. I say this to everyone, that the 26-foot U-Haul, I don't know how they let you pull that off the lot. It's incredible. You just go in, you get it. It's a moving truck. I loaded it up and I made a left turn around the building and I didn't scrape the side, but I bumped the side. And that was an eye opener for the next 30 hours that I better be careful with that thing. This one's going to be definitely a little bit different, definitely flights involved and make it as quick and easy as possible. So haven't got all the details yet. That's mixed in with the day job right now. We're grinding on some of these other finer details, but I can't wait to get over there. Super excited to get going. And yeah, I will not be doing, I think you could probably do it in about 8 days if you tried real hard. So that's not going to happen this time.
The buddy of mine that I mentioned that I have the fights with about luck rented a U-Haul truck to move back to Southern California from Vail, Colorado. Went under a bridge that was lower than he thought it was, sheared the top of the U-Haul truck off, which meant that he couldn't roll the back up off because the back, you know, rolls into the top of the truck. So then he parked, he had to drive the rest of the way with no roof on the top of the U-Haul truck, parked it out front of his folks' place in Long Beach, California. It started raining, couldn't roll the top of the truck off to get everything out. So they set a ladder up to climb into the back of the truck to remove everything. His dad slipped off the ladder in the rain and got hurt. And so like U-Haul trucks are a nightmare.
Yeah, I definitely, I didn't do any of that. That's for sure. But I did pull up to a couple gas stations and you're definitely looking for like what the height is. And mm-hmm. You're probably two in a row that first day where I just pulled up to the side to kind of check. So, I could see that happening.
And whereabouts in LA are you going to be living? Do you know yet?
That's a good question. Yeah, somewhere close for sure. Absolutely. I don't know if it's El Segundo or Manhattan or Hermosa, Redondo, somewhere around there. Something quick, something easy. Maybe the better answer is the rink, but yeah, somewhere around there.
Do you have a cot to set up in your office so you can just sleep at the rink?
No cot, but definitely good at sleeping on couches. That's a real skill of mine.
Perfect. Andrew Lord, thank you so much. And I look forward to grilling you with all sorts of silly questions over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you both.
Thank you, Coach.